When he can feel his brother sigh, when with him bear apart, when sorrows flow from eye to eye, and joy from heart to heart, when free from envy, scorn, and pride are wishes all above, each cat his brother's failings hide and show a brother's love. When love in one delightful stream through every bosom flows, when union sweet and dear esteem in every action glows, love is the golden chain that binds the happy souls above, and he's an heir of heaven who finds his bosom glow with love.
Good morning. My name is Joe Tipps. I am also the minister here. For the next couple of Sundays, I am going to be talking to you about the message of Jesus. If you've been keeping track, we have already discussed the miracles of Jesus, the power of Jesus. And the last three Sundays, we've been discussing the authority of Jesus, all in preparation for today, all in preparation for the next four Sundays as we discuss his message. See, what is the message of Jesus? And so for this continuing throughout this month, and Lord willing, without a baby coming too soon, and that's our prayer, by the way, that this baby comes soon. And a side note, I hope you're praying over Nick and Sylvia and Natalie. I am blessed and I'm spoiled because I get to see God's work hands-on. I want you to know that as the church family of our families, that we are witnessing God in action, that we are witnessing a miracle. And it is, it's indescribable to see what God can do through humble hearts, through prayer. And so I pray that you are praying for us, that you are thanking God for what he is doing with our family here in Ventura, this congregation, this body. We just covet your thoughts in this. So the question I want you to consider as we begin is, what is the essential message of Jesus? If someone puts you on the spot, and this rarely happens, but I want you to imagine the awkwardness of someone coming to you, maybe a relative, or worse, a stranger, right? So you're sitting at a Starbucks, and somebody comes up to you, and they see you reading your Bible, because everyone reads their Bibles at Starbucks. And so they see you reading your Bible, or they see you reading maybe a devotional book or something like that, maybe they see you praying over your meal, and they come up to you, and they ask you, are you a Christian? And after you're done hyperventilating, you say, yes, don't hurt me. Like, don't hit me. Like, I'm sorry. I don't know what's going to happen next. And so they ask you, you're a Christian? And you say, yes, because you don't know what's going to happen next. And so they ask you a difficult question. What is the message of Jesus? And you've got a minute. What is it? What do you say? Okay, and you can't say love, all right? You can't, that's cheating, all right? You cannot say love. You got to come up with some theology. You got to come up with something to explain it. What is the message of Jesus? What is the point of his actual words, of his sermons? See, out of all the things that you have ever heard, all the Sunday mornings, of all the poems, all the books, everything that you have put together in your own faith walk, how would you respond to something like that? And it be simple and not complicated. And it doesn't take an hour. What would you say? See, I find it interesting, as I was putting together this lesson, and I thought there would be more kind of pushback as far as how we arranged this lesson, because usually we hear this series, this idea of how do we talk to people about Jesus. We always hear this series backwards. We always start with the message of Jesus, and then we discuss the authority of Jesus, and then by that time, we have hopefully taken people along this journey enough for them to allow for miracles. Because we may be embarrassed about the miracles, or maybe we don't want to have to explain to them that we believe in a Jew that walks on water, that claimed that he was the Son of God, that he was the Messiah of mankind. So maybe by the time we've already discussed his message, they'll just kind of come around. So instead, I kind of flip this on its head. I first want to look at the actions of Jesus. I want to see his power. And then I want to look at his authority. Where does Jesus go to? So once we listen to his message, we've already seen him in action. We've already seen where his authority is coming from. And now we are ready for what he has to say. Because I will tell you this. It is far easier to believe on Jesus walking on water than to accept his message. Because his message is countercultural. His message is difficult. It's almost impossible. His message is revolutionary. See, if there's one truth about this new generation that is coming up, and I know that we are both millennials are getting sick of it, I'm getting sick of it, everyone's getting sick of using this word millennial, so I will just describe it as our teens and our young adults. If there's one truth about this new generation coming up underneath us, if they do not feel loved, if they do not feel accepted, if they do not feel wanted, then they will not listen to a word you have to say. They need to see your faith in action. They need to see the actions first. We can stand on a soapbox in the middle of downtown and we can preach all we want. But if they do not see us in action, then it doesn't matter what we have to say. So what that means is they need to see you living out your faith. They need to see you living out the grace that has been given to you. They need to see you living out the love that we speak about so often. See, if we can hand them all the material that we have, we can talk to them about God until we are blue in the face. But if they do not see our faith in action, our love in action, our grace in action, then we have missed a God-given opportunity. It's the same with how Jesus presents himself to his disciples. He shows them the actions. He shows them the love and the grace and the acceptance when he freely gives it to them. And his message backs that up. So we need to do the same thing. So if you have your Bibles, we're going to be starting in Mark chapter 8. And we're going to start in verse 31. I kind of will repeat this. The reason I love Mark, especially when using this as a Bible study, especially people are interested, is because, man, Mark just, it hits all the points, and then it moves on. It talks about the narrative, the story, the power of Jesus, and it's boom, 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 one story after the other. And so then we have these teachings kind of mixed in. And so we kind of find ourselves in the middle of this discussion. And so we're going to start in verse 31 of Mark chapter 8. And he began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes and be killed. And after 3 days, rise again. And he said this plainly. And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But turning and seeing his disciples, he rebuked Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan. For you are not setting your mind on the things of God, but on the things of man." Jesus is exposing the gospel of this place, the gospel of the world. And that message is a power over philosophy. See, Jesus starts right at the throat by attacking the issue that Peter is representing. And so Jesus looks out and he sees this place for what it actually is. And that is a power over society. That means our need to dominate and to control, to regulate others, that this is famously insatiable. Throughout history, this is what we are known for. See, this is the point of rebellion and a coup d'etat and a revolution. It's in order to exert control over something else. And so when Jesus looks at Peter, Peter is representing us. Peter is representing our philosophy that when God says this is what needs to happen, Peter fights against that. You don't start a revolution just to voluntarily give it up, which is what Jesus is admitting. So put yourselves in the disciples' shoes. Listen to what Jesus is actually saying. Jesus has called you out of your life. He has called you out of being fishermen. He has called you out of the mundane. He's called you out of your positions. And he has started a revolution, a rebellion. And he says, follow me. We are going to change the world. We are going to do incredible things. We are going to overthrow society. We are going to reestablish God's throne. We are going to fulfill the Old Testament. Centuries, thousands of years of prophecy. And this is what I want you to be a part of. Doesn't that attract you? Don't you want to be a part of something that passionate? Right? That be a part of that rebellion, to be excited about your faith, to be excited about your faith community again. And so Jesus does incredible miracles. He walks on water. He feeds thousands of people. He heals random strangers. He shows you that he is king, that he has a power and the authority to do everything. And then he looks at you and says, I'm going to give it up. I'm going to go. I'm going to suffer. It's going to look like giving up to you. It's going to look like death to you. But I want you to know I'm doing this on purpose. And he speaks plainly to them and tells them, I am not going to be a part of this system anymore. I'm not going to be a part of this power over philosophy. I'm not going to parrot this world's gospel anymore. I'm going to do something countercultural. And what's amazing about Jesus' message, it is counter every culture. So whether or not you are a baby boomer or a millennial or an in-betweener, it is counter all cultures. When Jesus looks at us and says, the point is sacrifice. Sacrifice. Does that sound like an attractive message? Right? If you come up, someone says, and I'm like, what is the message of Jesus? All right, I got it for you. You ready? You ready for this message? Sacrifice. That's hard. Can we admit that that's hard? Can we admit that that is a difficult thing to do? I'm an American. I never sacrifice. I don't sacrifice anything. I don't sacrifice my preferences. I don't sacrifice my comfort. The basis of our entire society is by determining how successful you are by how comfortable you are. Right? If you got a house, a couple of houses, you have more TVs in your home than you do people, then that means you are successful. I don't give up. I don't give up anything, let alone my pride, my beliefs. I don't give up on these things. What Jesus is starting with is by saying that you cannot fulfill the calling of God while perpetuating the world's status quo. Jesus is saying, you give up. Sacrifice. Sacrifice. You have to die. And he shows us by first the benefits of it, and then we get to see it in what he actually does for us. So how do we fall for the same lies that Peter did? What do we do? What do we do in the same way that Peter did towards Jesus? How do we look at God and say that you are not enough? How do we communicate to him that sacrifice and humble submission doesn't work, that it's not the way things should be? See, how do we say to God that you may be leading me down this path, but I refuse to go? I know better. Have you ever said that in your life? More importantly, how have you ever acted that out in your life? God, I know you are leading our church down this path, but I'm uncomfortable with it. I don't know what's down there. I refuse to go. I refuse to go down there. I refuse to see the questions they have for me, let alone explore the answers that we could discover together. I'm far more comfortable with where I'm at, because this power over society is all I have ever known. So as long as we stay here, then the point of church becomes, as long as I can exert authority over you and change your habits and power over you, then I'm in control. I'm in control of everything, and that's a safe place to be. I love being in control. That's why I became a minister. I was told, if you became a minister, you can have power over people. It's not true. It's not true at all. How do we communicate to God? I shouldn't have to sacrifice my preferences to accommodate someone that acts, looks, or talks differently than me. God, I know you want me to go down this path. I know you want me to sacrifice, but I'm far too comfortable with where I'm at, with what I am doing, with the ministries I am providing, with fill in the blank. I'm far too comfortable here, God, and I know better than you as to what should happen. So how does God respond to that message? How does God respond? How does Jesus respond to Peter when he says, I want to stick with what the world is doing? I want to stick with this power over. This rebellion is just gaining traction. I don't want to leave this. We're just starting to influence people. We're just starting to control people. We're just starting to move. And how does Jesus respond? Get behind me, Peter. No, I would love it if he had said that, because that'd be such a tame response to such an enormous offense to Jesus. He says, get behind me, Satan. Satan. The word Satan means adversary. See, he is the accuser, the father of lies, that convinces us that we know better than the King Jesus. See, instead of trusting God, we should trust our instincts, or we should trust the intentions of our culture, our society, or our generation. See, these things will make us perfect. They will make us complete. See, Satan trains us from birth that the point of life is to gain control. And through manipulation, either by force or through thought, and through the subjection of others, that we can be perfected. That our church would be perfect. Our faith would be perfect. And see, what's so amazing about this story is, Satan isn't just attacking some bystander. Satan isn't just attacking some random stranger who approaches Jesus and says no. Satan is attacking Peter, an apostle, someone who has seen all that Jesus has done. And Jesus responds, get behind me, adversary. Get behind me. I know this is all that you can see, but this is not the point. This is not God's way. God's way is sacrifice. See, we have been fed this storyline our entire lives. And from generation to generation, though the story may change its names, its characters, and even its places, it may even switch an entire genre, but the message is all the same. It's all about you. It's all about you. You know better. It's all about you. You know better. You want to get to heaven? Do good things. Right? Go to Africa. Feed the poor. If you want to go to heaven, work. And you just might do it. It's all about you. It's all about us. This is what this world is promoting. It is all about us. And we've been fed this story our entire lives. Now, have you ever watched a movie or read a book, right, where you've been led this story and it's really interesting, and at the very end, in the finale, the climax, you discover that it was all a lie or it was all a dream, and those are the worst, right? When you watch a story and you find out they're all in purgatory or something like that, and the entire story, you have to rewatch it again with that in mind, right? You find out your conflict companion's been made up in your mind the entire time, or you read a book, and then through seven books, you think that this guy's the enemy, like he is the actual enemy, but in the seventh book, you find out he's actually the hero, right? You guys know what I'm talking about? I want to give away that story. That's annoying. It's annoying to be led your entire life that this is truth, all right? It's annoying to be led down this path thinking that this is the correct path, only to have someone come by and say, what are you doing here? You're going down the wrong path. This isn't what I had in store for you. This is what I have in mind for you. This is what Jesus does at this turning point. Look at verse 34. All right, he responds to Peter, says, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are not setting your mind on the things of God, but on the things of man." Verse 34. "So he called to him the crowd with his disciples and said to them," which I also find very embarrassing for Peter. Now, have you ever made a mistake to your teacher, right? And you thought it was a private mistake and you're a little embarrassed, but the teacher wants to take that as a teaching lesson. So he says, "All right, gather around, students. Joe just said this stupid thing, and it is completely wrong. I want you to know, don't ever..." All right, so Jesus takes this as a teaching opportunity to kind of put Peter on the spot and to tell his disciples that what just happened cannot be true. It cannot continue. "If anyone would come after me," which is what I want to do, "let him deny himself," I can handle this so far, "and take up his cross and follow me." I'm okay with following Jesus. I love following Jesus. I'm paid to follow Jesus. I love it. It's my calling. It's something I wanted to do since high school. It's something I've gone to school. I've spent thousands of hours considering following Jesus. I've read tons of books. Guys, tons of books, thousands of pages on following Jesus. And if you're anything like me, I am far too comfortable considering following Jesus than actually following Jesus. Because that message, it's almost impossible. Follow me? Well, pick up your cross. Pick up your cross and follow after Jesus. "For whoever would save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his life? For what can a man give in return for his life? For whoever is ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him will the Son of Man also be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels." See, the first is last. Those who give up their lives will get them, and those who hold on to their lives will lose them. Up is down. God is man. This sounds crazy, nonsensical, fantasy. This is not what the world teaches us. See, evolution teaches us that the animal with the bigger stick, the sharpest teeth, the strongest will to survive, they win. Right? That's what evolution teaches us, is that the strongest will survive. And Jesus responds with, "I don't want you to survive. I want you to live. I want you to live fully. I want you to live completely, perfectly. And the only way to achieve such a miraculous feat is by laying on the altar our assumptions, our wisdom, our conclusions, and even our very lives, and rely completely and solely on Jesus Christ." That is the point. It's not about you. It's not even about what you think. It's not about your past experiences. It's not about your baggage. It's not even about necessarily your sin. It's not about you. It isn't about you. It is all about Jesus. And I want that to sink in, because what I am saying is what I am saying. It's all about Jesus. It is all about him. He doesn't want you to just survive. He wants you to live. Think of this in Romans chapter 12. "Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good and pleasing and perfect." Notice first the transformation and the renewal, and then being able to test and approve God's will. I want to be able to test and approve God's will first, and then I'll be transformed. Once I see it, once I'm able to look at it and test it, "All right, God, you want me to remove this and worship, and you want me to do something else?" I want to see that first before I approve it. We want to sing new songs. I want to see them first, learn them first before we do them. "God, I want to make sure that somebody is in control." Jesus goes, "No, that's this world's thought process. You need to be transformed. You need to be renewed. The entire eighth chapter of Romans, and that is your homework, and I'm going to give you homework. The entire eighth chapter of Romans is dedicated to our death and the new life that we have through Christ. So the question, hopefully, Lord willing, the question that you have is, how do we live this life that Jesus wants us to? And are you ready for the secret? I've already said it. Are you ready for it? Pick up your cross and follow Jesus. Don't follow me. You can walk beside me. And I need people to walk beside me. Don't follow Dave. He needs people to walk beside him as well. Don't follow Cameron. Walk beside Cameron. Encourage Cameron as you take up your cross and you follow your Savior, Jesus Christ. That is who we are supposed to follow. That is the example that we are supposed to do. See, only when we die to this place, to ourselves, to others, can we pick up the life that Jesus, that God has always wanted for us. And it looks a lot like death. But in Philippians chapter 1 and verse 21, one of my favorite verses, it says this: "For to me, to live is," you can speak aloud if you would like, "to live is," thank you, "and to die is," yes, yes. When we live, our life becomes Christ. And when we die, because we will die, our death becomes gain, because it is not the end. And Jesus has proven that to us. See, the message of Jesus stands in complete opposition to everything this world has ever taught us. His message is about sacrifice and death. And only through sacrificial death can we discover the life that God has always wanted for us. So if you want to be a part of that life, I ask you to pick up your cross and follow Jesus. If you have any needs this morning, any questions, please come forward as we stand and as we sing.